Due to phone lines being down at our Pennsylvania studio, from which our program is streamed to the stations and is our call center, we were unable to bring you a live Kingdom Concepts broadcast on September 1st. Therefore, our intended guest from South Africa will be rescheduled at a future date. This month, we substituted a previous Kingdom Concepts broadcast featuring the same guest.
Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians, called to a higher level of understanding, will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening, this is Brother Mike, welcoming you to another one of our live First of the Month Kingdom Concepts broadcasts. We're coming to you tonight over WWCR 4.840 MHz, WBCQ 4.415 MHz. Both of those stations also have an internet feed, but you can probably get the clearest feed directly from our website. You'll see Winamp, MP3, Windows Media, RealPlayer, and others. We always appreciate your reception reports, both for the shortwave and over the internet, so we know how we're going out. If you would like to call us and participate in the program tonight, it's a toll-free number, 877-924-7722. That's 877-924-7722. You can remember that by 877-YAWS-RACE. Tonight we're going to have a special broadcast on South Africa, and I have two guest hosts tonight. One was born and raised in South Africa, is a person who understands the Israel identity message, two seed lines, strong believer, very active in the faith. That's Monica Stone, who now lives in the United States in Louisiana. And my other guest is here in our Arkansas studio with us. He was born and raised in England, and went to South Africa and still lives there, went over 40 years ago. That's my cousin, Neil Frisch. So I'd like to welcome both of you to the broadcast tonight.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Let's start with you, Monica. You were born and raised down in South Africa, and I know you're familiar with the history and all. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the history of South Africa?
Yes, where do we start? It started in 1652. When the Afrikaner race was born, when the Dutch East India Company sent Jan van Riebeeck and their employees to establish an outpost at the Cape. The purpose of the expedition was not to establish a permanent settlement or colony, but a way station which could serve as ships passing on the long voyage to and from India. It was 5 years after van Riebeeck landed that the company gave to some of its employees the right to stay on as independent colonists. So they started settling there, and of course the clashes with the Hottentots, the only blacks down there, started. Some former employees of the company were now independent, set up businesses which started competing with their former employees with trade with passing ships. The colonists quickly felt themselves threatened by the former employees for the Dutch India Company, which seized the lion's share of shipping trade and insisted of the monopoly of trade with the Hottentots. But slowly the colony expanded, and more people came in from Europe, from Holland, from Germany, from France, and of course the British settlers came in 1795. But what is so wonderful is that the foundation of the faith was the Bible. And they had so many, many multitude of obstacles. But they stayed strong in the faith. And settled there and built a beautiful area in Cape Town. And
I believe they were similar to our pilgrims,
yes,
both fleeing Europe for persecution and
yes,
wanting to depart from the establishment religion.
Absolutely. I mean, the Huguenots came over from France being persecuted there, the Protestants, of course, and so it was with so many others that came over. We still have a little town there called Franschhoek. That's the French Corner. And some people still speak French there. My cousin teaches French there. It's, so this is a big thing. And, of course, the Germans came, not necessarily because of religion, but they had such a famine in Germany in the 1830s. And they came over to South Africa. But what's very interesting is that they embarked in Rotterdam. So it was said that they were Dutchmen. But they were not Dutchmen, they were Germans. So the majority of the people coming in from Europe were from Germany and not necessarily from Holland. But anyway, then the British came and brought all their liberal ideas and the equality of the races. So a lot of friction started. And then the Voortrekkers decided, though, they can't stand this now. They're going to pack up and move to the north. So in 1836, the Great Trek started all over the Drakensberg. That's directly translated as the Dragon's Teeth. It looks like Dragon's Teeth, the mountains, and it's just incredible how they went over those big mountains. I think you can like it here, like the Rocky Mountains with the ox wagons. I had to take the wheels off and drag it over there, and the women said, we're not going to stand this, even if we go barefoot over the mountains, but we're going into freedom. So they started trekking over the mountains and went into the wilderness. And, of course, simultaneously, the blacks moved from the north down to the south, and clashes started, and so many of the whites were murdered horribly, horribly. The wives of the poor men were raped and slaughtered big time, and the babies' heads were cracked open on the wagon wheels. And then came the Covenant and the Battle of Blood River. That in itself is such a wonderful miracle, that just incredible and wonderful. They started praying for a whole week to ask God to beat them and give the enemy to them, and they will then have that specific day as a holy day, as a Sabbath day for God and for centuries to come and for everybody after them. They prayed to God, and the 407 men were in this battle of Blood River with about 10,000, 20,000 Zulu impis soldiers attacking them. And the Zulus later said that they had to fight all these white-clothed men coming out of the sky. So they were trampled to death because they got so scared. And not one white man was killed with the Battle of Blood River. So it's such a wonderful miracle, but it's the faith in God, Yahweh, that carried them through. And, of course, they saw themselves as Israelites because they called so many cities and little towns. Bethlehem, Bethel, Nailstrom, that is directly translated the Nile Stream. And so we established a beautiful country and a civilized country that is now, since 1994, of course, going to pot.
You want to talk a little bit about the Boer War and how the country reverted to black rule?
Yes, we had the Anglo-Boer. We had two wars of independence, that the British just came in with annexed the Transvaal. That's the old South African Republic under Paul Kruger. And about a year later, they said, no, we're not going to be under British rule. And they fought the British and they won the war. But, of course, it didn't last. that in 1899, the war broke out with 60,000 Boers fighting Great Britain with 450,000 soldiers. So that took place from 1899 to 1902, and we saw many miracles for an untrained force, as the fighting force of the Boers consisted mainly of farmers. Against the well-trained British, with the help of Heavenly Father, we could keep them at bay for 3 years. For the outbreak of the war, the man whose advice the Boer forces would be more than valuable was Nicholas van Rensburg. He was a seer and a prophet, and he helped the commandos and told them what to do so they could disappear when he told them the British forces are coming, or when to fight and how to fight. And he was absolutely invaluable with his prophetic visions. He had only 3 weeks of schooling. His mother taught him to read and understand the Bible. And that's all he had. With all his advice and warnings to the Boer forces, he would make use of what was happening during Bible times. He understood the force of Satan and evil he unleashed against the Boer nation with the help of British forces.
The reason for the Second Boer War was primarily because the British wanted the gold and diamonds that South Africa is so rich in.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, they started pushing Paul Kruger to allow the foreigners, and with the foreigners we reduced that they wanted voting rights, and he said, no, you can stay in this country for 5 years, then become a citizen, and then you can vote, and that was not good enough. Because they really wanted to get rid of him, and of course the Orange Free State together with President Steyn. As you said so correctly, they wanted the diamonds and they wanted the gold. So they had to overthrow the white rule there. And we became a union in 1910. All four provinces became one and was known as the Union of South Africa. So we became a republic in 1961 on the 31st of May. There was an election, a referendum, and the people overwhelmingly voted for an independent republic. Dr. Verwoerd became the prime minister, but of course then the forces were really unleashed because he wanted to nationalize the mines. He wanted to get the blacks out of the white areas and have them commute to come and work in the mines and the factories, and that would not work with these one world forces. And he was assassinated on the 6th of September 1966, and then it was one way downwards, and the sellout and the treason by people that look like us became vicious, absolutely vicious. And in 1994, the ANC, African National Congress, that's not national, like communists, came into power with Mandela as the first black president. He lasted only 4 years, and then Thabo Mbeki took over. He studied at the school, London School of Economics. As we know, this got nothing to do with economics. It's plain communist and social Fabianism. He became then president, and now we have Jacob Zuma with his five wives and 20 children, a complete dedicated communist. At this moment, as I speak today, 1.3 million civil servants are on strike. And I think your cousin Neil can tell you about that because he's living it. It's unreal. They're even forcing the school children to go on strike and toy with them. That's a real African dance. And if they don't, they attack them. So the situation is very dire there. It's really, really very bad.
What's hard for me to believe is that the whites would vote away their sovereignty, especially after seeing what happened in Rhodesia. Would you comment on how the whites were led astray by the powers that be?
Yes, I mean, it's very difficult for people to understand. It is even for me. I spoke to a very dear old friend of mine. He went through two world wars, and I said, why are people so stupid? And he said, you know what the problem is? That they had good, reliable governments all these years. And this is why they trusted the people. telling them, don't worry about it. We will still have separate schools. We will have sovereignty. There will not be a problem. Even what happened in Rhodesia, that is, it's not ever going to happen here. And they trusted the people to not to commit this horrible treason in selling them out.
Of course, the Jews control the media down in South Africa, just like they do in the United States and most other countries in the world.
Absolutely, and of course, that I lay the blame on the front door of the White House here. They were very much involved in the sellout of white South Africa as well as Britain. They worked very hard with Lord Carrington and your, what is his name, Harrington that came over, Huntington that came over. And pushed the new curriculum in the schools, and Kissinger, of course, that we were 15 kilometers of taking Luanda, the capital of Angola, during our border war against the communists. And Kissinger flew in and he told the Minister of Defense, then P.W. Bush, you're just going to take this. The forces out here, you're not going to go any further. This is the end of the war.
Apparently, the people thought of more of sports than they did their own sovereignty. You were telling me about going to the polls and people having, I guess, various types of sporting equipment under their arms.
Yes.
If you'd like to comment
on absolutely.
That.
Yeah, I remember telling you that I worked the one referendum. Where they got the choice of giving it away, the yes and the no vote. And I worked, of course, at the no vote. And I was sitting there looking at the people, the line going to the yes vote, very long. And I had maybe one or two people coming to my table to vote no. And a man came out of line and he said to me, I feel so sorry for you. I said, why? He said, you're not going to make it. I said, well, I'm just telling you. That you will remember what I'm telling you now. You're going to regret doing this. You are standing here with your rugby balls that are under the arm and your tennis rackets because you can go and play now tennis and rugby and soccer and whatever you want all over the world. And that is not going to help you. This is going to kill us. The sport is going to kill us.
I think our people in this country are just as stupid the way this nation's going down.
Yeah,
we have a caller on line two, Nico from Finland. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brother Mike.
Hi, brother. Before you make your comment, let me tell our audience a little bit about Nico. He came over 2 years ago when we were just getting set up in our new headquarters here and helped out a great deal to helping the ministry. And he's a graduate of our American Institute of Theology course and a dedicated Christian identity believer. So, like you said, welcome to the broadcast, Nico. I know you've been to South Africa several times in recent months. Do you have a comment?
No, I was just wondering, you know, for example, I've been in South Africa, and, you know, I've spent some time with CI people down there. And I think more than anything, I just wonder what comments we can make about, the Christian identity in South Africa, and I guess maybe the kind of things they're teaching and also what they believe and also what is the future, you know, for the whites in South Africa. And
I believe you found some friction between the different groups when you were down there, and also heresy in certain areas such as the anti-Paul people. And wasn't this the case when you were visiting down there?
Yeah, I found, you know, a lot of people, they just seem, of course, they do reject the books of Paul, and they do have different theologies. Even, I believe you're maybe familiar with the old Arian theology, you know, which states that Christ is not God, but only a lesser heavenly being. And it seems a lot of people also follow that doctrine in South Africa. And on top of that, you know, it's I spoke with a lot of, you know, like kind of elders or different ministers, and everybody seems to have, you know, like a differing theology over there in South Africa. So it seems as, you know, like everybody just has different ideas about what the scriptures mean, and these small differences get them fighting a whole lot in between themselves and not fighting the true enemy.
Well, I know Monica's familiar with a number of different groups down there, some that have stayed true and probably some that have departed. Do you have a comment, Monica?
I agree about that. I always said if you have two Boers on an island, you'll have four different religions and five different political parties. This is the problem, that they don't focus on who the real enemy is, but they all think this ego trip that I will be able to solve the problem, and this is not the way it should be. And I know the infighting, it really hurts me, and I don't know how to solve it. The problem, of course, is the mixture of French and German and Dutch blood all there. I suppose that's part of the problem. I don't know. I don't have an answer, but the answer what I can give you about the white survival there, it's going to be okay. It's going to sort out. I can tell you that. It's a promise God made to us, and it's there's no doubt about it. I know that. He told us.
Let me ask you both, is there still animosity between the English people and the previous Afrikaners, or has that gone away? Is it still in existence? Have they united against the black rule and communist Jewish conspiracy, or is there still animosity between the two?
Well, I don't know if I should start that one, Mike. I endorse pretty well everything Monica says, of course, and she would know the early bit of South Africa before I went there in the late 1960s. I think one of the problems is that they always said that there were two stiff-necked races in South Africa, the British and the Afrikaner. And for a long time, there was problems about them sort of reconciling their differences. It's maybe a bit late to say that now, but we hope that things are going to reconcile between the two white main races. But it's going to be a long process, you see. They were the Afrikaner was in a small colony. And before a colony, they were independent, of course, for many years, whereas the British had a mighty empire at the time, which since then, of course, has fallen away. Don't know if you want to add to that, Monica.
Oh, yes, I agree with you. No, they will be forced by circumstance to stand together now. It's just so sad that I don't know if you know about it, Neil. There are about 80 camps around Pretoria alone with unemployed Afrikaners, mainly Afrikaners, all of them Afrikaners. They're starving to death. It is really the saddest thing. It's like the concentration camps all over again in the Anglo-Boer War, you know. But I think that they will work together and everything is going to be okay. I don't think I know it's going to be okay. It was promised like this. We have to go through this tribulation. Because we're a stiff-necked people, and Neil, there I agree with you. Both stiff-necked people. And England is going through the same tribulations, and it's going to get worse there before they start seeing. And
you commented briefly on the concentration camps. Those were the first concentration camps in the world. And,
exactly,
of course,
yes.
The conditions were horrible. Do you want to say a few words more on that?
Oh, yes, yes, it was horrible. I mean, it's they were taken by example. Those the farmers' wives that stayed on the farms while the husbands were fighting in the field, living in the north of the country, were taken to the south or the east of the country where it's so much colder and vice versa. So they had to cope with that. And, I mean, there was fish hooks put in the food and pieces of glass that they bled to death. This one, Commandant Skippers, he was a Cape rebel. They gave him broken glass in his food. I mean, you can't see it, of course, in sugar. So he swallowed it and he was bleeding to death, but they still killed him. They put him on a chair in the middle of the field and they just shot him as being a Cape rebel. So there we had the Cape people fighting together with the Boers in the field in the Transvaal and the Orange Free State. Something interesting, you know, that the Orange Free State never signed the peace treaty. Only the Transvaal did.
I know that there's a group of whites wanting to separate the Orange Free State and the Transvaal area from the rest of South Africa, but I imagine their position's much weaker, of course, than when they had control and had the military. But you do have hope because of the prophecies, I believe.
Yes, I do, and I mean, I don't agree with only having the Transvaal. It's we don't we landlocked. We don't have a way to the sea, and it's impossible to do it that way. The country from the Cape to the Zambezi belonged to the Boer nation or the whites. Let's put it this way. From the Cape to the Zambezi, that was promised to us in Zephaniah 3 verses 10. So if there's somebody out there that really wants to make an effort and go and read it, that beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, my children will bring the offering. And it's going to be okay. I just know that.
I interpolate here a little bit, Monica, about going back to the concentration camps. Of course, in those days, 1900,
yes.
There was only about probably 500,000 white people in the whole of South Africa.
That's correct. Yes.
And 25,000 Afrikaners were women and children died in the conditions there of typhoid and other.
Yeah.
Starvation tactics, because of course this was calculated to weaken the males, the men in the field.
Yes.
And of course, if you look at what those 25,000, they would have had large families, and the proportion of white people in South Africa, instead of being say 5 or 6 million at 1994.
Yeah.
May well have been the majority. So this is one of the big tragedies of the Boer War, which is really, although it's touched on, it's not really emphasized. And it's quite important, the demographic proportion of the white people has therefore been much, much reduced as a result of what happened in the concentration camps.
I agree with you. And we really don't know, Neil, really how many babies really died. That were born in the camps. They when they die, they were just disappeared. Apparently, some of them were just fed to the pigs. And I don't want to sound like a Holocaust survivor, but I mean it really happened. We have the proof of it. It is really, and you're correct. We could have been 18 million and even more if this didn't happen. It really weakened. But the other thing is, of course, it never stopped after the war. That no Afrikaner could get a job. They were absolutely victimized. They because they don't speak English, they couldn't find a job, and they were all they really suffered for many years after that. It only started getting better after 1910 with the union. And then, of course,
well, hasn't it been somewhat the same recently with the blacks ruling the country, where a lot of the Afrikaners no longer hold jobs that they previously did?
No, it's the same, and this is why they in these camps. I mean, this one old woman, 82 years old, she was living in a water tank for 2 years. I mean, really, they're starving. There's no money to feed them. The welfare is not interested. They, because it's all black, and this is now another way of killing off the white.
From a number of people, but I believe Nico and I discussed it before, that a number of the people in South Africa are in denial about what's happening to them.
Oh, yes. It's like, well, I call it the Stockholm Syndrome. You know, they're being held hostage, and they just think, well, if I give away and if I please the enemy, maybe I'll be okay. It's like, while the crocodile is eating you, he won't eat me, type of stuff. Yes, that's correct. They are in denial, and that's so sad that they don't get together and do something. But then also, if you talk to some of the military men, they will tell you that the Carnegie Plan was already in place in, I think, 1949, that if there is ever a white backlash, that the planes will be ready, the ships will be ready, and so many troops to send into South Africa, they would have pulled an Iraq on South Africa.
Yes, so, I have copies of that Carnegie report.
Excellent. So you
I know exactly what you're talking about. And they spoke about both Russian and United States troops and other countries united against South Africa.
Exactly. This is why they capitulated. I mean, Foster was really a traitor, but this is what he said in his last speech to the students in Pretoria, the University of Pretoria, he said that if I didn't do what I did, it would have been too ghastly to contemplate. But I mean, this, what's happening now, is also ghastly. It's horrible. I mean, we talk about 3,500 white farmers already being murdered, and 30,000 plus other whites being tortured and murdered. And we don't even know how many blacks. We talk about 400,000 people died since 1994. But nothing is said about this. They talk about the casualties in Afghanistan and Iraq and Somalia, in Darfur. It's so horrible what's happening there, but nobody will ever say anything what's happening in South Africa, and I think Neil can agree with me about this.
Yes, it's a politically correct situation now there for the powers that be, I think is probably the way to term it.
Yes.
I believe South Africa has the highest murder and rape rate in the world. And, of course, the blacks, they rape a lot of the little children because they believe it prevents AIDS and HIV.
Yes, indeed, this is true. And we had a situation where the present president of South Africa, Jacob Zuma, had unprotected sex with a woman less than half his age, and then he took a shower on the basis that the shower would immunize him from AIDS, if you can believe this.
Yes, and eating garlic and beetroot, isn't
beetroot,
that?
Beetroot, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. This is, I mean, they're such superstitious people. And isn't it so sad that people like that are ruling over a civilized people now and destroying the country? And, I mean, they just throw the garbage all over the streets and not thinking of all the illnesses this is causing. They just don't care because they just don't care. What can I say? They're not even savages. I don't even know how to describe these people.
I feel like commenting that it's sad that we have some black rulers ruling over us in this country. We may not be to the extent that they are in South Africa yet, but our people are in denial, too. You try to show them the truth, and they turn their head. Basically, what I'm trying to do tonight is show the people what happened to Rhodesia, to South Africa, and has now helped happening to the United States and trying to wake up some of our people.
Yeah, this is why it's so very, very, very serious and important to carry the message of what happened with white people in Africa. I mean, we can start with the North, and Ghana became the first independent country. And I mean, what's in Ghana now? Nothing. And so you can come down south one by one. They all fell because of treason. And the Portuguese being stabbed, the Germans being stabbed in the back, and their colonies taken away. The list goes on and on and on, and the same thing all over. It's like with the Voortrekkers when they went over the mountains and clashed with all the other black tribes. The women were raped, their bellies cut open, and the children taken out if they were pregnant. And it's happening now. Neil can verify that. It's the same thing. Nothing changed.
Yes, it's the way of solving Africa's problems because it goes by tribe, doesn't it?
Yes, and of course the tribes are also fighting each other. Maybe that will be, in the end, the salvation of the white man, because the Zulu will never get on with the Xhosa, and the Xhosa will never get along with the Ndebele. So that, and of course, all these foreigners coming into the country from Nigeria, the Congo, Somalia, all over. They're coming into the land of milk and honey, and the country cannot carry so many people. We're talking about between 40 and 50 million blacks coming into the country. We don't have the water, and talking about the water, 3% of the sewage plants are only working in the country. And the acid water in the mines, worked out gold mines in Johannesburg, that's rising. It's 600 meters below surface now, but it's rising a meter a day. So what are we talking about? 60 days, maybe 6 months, the water will burst out, and maybe your Johannesburg will sink into this big hole. I don't know.
I know that you've commented before, you're living there in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, and there's a lot of blacks down there, and I remember Katrina and all.
Mm-hmm.
But the nature of the blacks in America or anywhere else in the world is exactly the same nature that they had over in Africa.
But they came from there, and it's in the genes. Even if they haven't had contact with blacks at all. This is what they are, and they live on their emotions, and their hatred towards the white people are so vicious and so deep-seated that they will cut their own throats and starve to death like they do in Rhodesia or in Zimbabwe now to get rid of the whites. They've got to do that.
Well, I think it's a matter of possibly jealousy. They think that the whites have just exploited everything without having done any hard work to build up the country economically, and this is what they can never do, it seems. They are subsistence farmers at the last resort. You have two places in Africa. When they've exhausted the soil, then they'll go on to the next place. If there's a tribe there, they'll fight the tribe, and the stronger one wins. And so it goes on for hundreds and thousands of years. So
that's it. That's it. Yes, they just move from the one to the other.
There's no inner city in this country that's not filled with blacks that any white woman wouldn't walk there at night. Probably not in the day.
No,
she's
going to
be raped, and the men are going to be murdered.
Exactly.
Nico, you said, you know, I know you have a smaller percentage, but up there in Finland, the same nature, isn't that true?
Well, yeah. Up here in Finland, for example, we have a percentage of blacks the percentage is probably something like 0.001 or something. There's like 5,000 Negroes in a country of 5 million, so that's almost nothing. But they're here causing absolute mayhem, you know, like raping.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, I guess, there are some of them committing murders, you know, just being obnoxious. And on top of that, you know, polluting the race. And then on top of that, in Sweden, for example, they have more. And I'm like, I don't know the exact numbers, but they're just there causing absolute chaos. You know, in smaller towns, they're just running the whole town, causing riots, burning everything down. And that's just a small percentage. Imagine when they start becoming, you know, a majority or something. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's also a couple of things I wanted to comment on.
Yeah, sure.
Going back to the concentration camps, what I wanted to point out was, for example, the British government has offered apologies and crawled on their knees to practically every nation that used to be, you know, like a British colony. For example, they've offered apologies to Pakistan, to India,
mm-hmm.
and for black slavery.
Mm-hmm.
But they never once offered an apology to the Boers for the genocide and for the Boer War. And
you
it just
correct.
Shows the complete hypocrisy.
Yeah, you're correct. I've got the letters, Mr. Jaap Marais, the leader of the HNP, that's the reconstituted National Party, wrote to the Queen. And it was just sneered at and said it's not important. Not important.
It's far right sort of thing.
So, isn't that a proof that these one-worlders or power elite really want to destroy the white race? This is what it's all about.
I mean, I would think that judging by what's happening in the world today, this speaks for itself.
Yes.
I think the reason they want to destroy the white race with race mixing, among other reasons, I suppose, is that they can control them. I know that they fear the American people waking up like the German people did in the 30s. Now, I'm not defending everything that the National Socialist government did, but the fact is that they started waking up to the Jewish problem, and the Jews are always afraid that a pure white race may wake up and throw off the yoke.
Yeah, that's very true. But just an interesting story, just on a lighter side. We had a gas station in Kempton Park where I grew up, and one day during the 1976 Soweto riots, one of our customers was a Jew, a Dr. Belcher, a dentist, and he stormed into my office, very upset, white in his face, and he said, come and have a look at my car. They stoned my car. I went to Soweto, that's the black township just outside Johannesburg. I think everybody knows about that. But anyway, his car was full of dents, and then they were screaming at him. He was telling them, I'm Jewish. I said, well, you know, you look white. They're not going to ask you what nationality you are. If you look white, they're going to kill you. Just
wasn't one of the officials of the ANC a communist Jew?
This was Joe Slovo. He was actually a colonel in the KGB of Russia when the Soviet Union was in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And he became Minister of Housing in 1994, I think it was. and then he died a little bit later of cancer.
Yeah. No, he's not the only Jew. We had, of course, Goldreich, and all of them with the Rivonia case, with Mandela, the treason case. And what was interesting, he was condemned to death, and the Queen interfered. Of course, we were under the crown then, that he can get a life sentence. And he didn't suffer that much. He really had a good life. Eventually, the last 10 years, I think he was in a house with a swimming pool, and he was really taken care of because they trained him to take over. It's just interesting that all of them, Mugabe, all of them were in jail at one stage, and they were all members of the African National Congress, and they were all treated very well because that was the plan for them to take over one day.
I'd like to announce our call-in number again in case other people would like to participate in tonight's program. It's 877-924-7722. That's toll-free number, 877-924-7722. Did you say you had some other comments, Nico?
Yeah, I think also what I wanted to comment on was, you know, the complete difference between the black and white civilization. You know, I think you guys would also agree with me on this, that, you know, for example, for Negroes, for example, rape is not a crime. They do not consider rape a crime. And it's normal, you know, for young black girls to be raped or or subject to all kinds of, you know, awful treatment. And I think for them, you know, they don't have any kind of moral code. It's simply, you know, basically... who's the best killer, who's the best thief, who's the best rapist? He's the one who gets all the women, and he's the one who has children. So every generation is, you know, like, criminally speaking, more efficient. I just wanted to compare, you know, that simple, like, white civilization, of course, enforces good morals, correct behavior, and, of course, you know, criminals should be executed. But in black system, it's the criminals who get the women and the criminals who have children. So I thought, you've probably noticed that in black civilization, that it's just completely indifferent. And any people who talk about this so-called integration, you know, are just kidding themselves, because it ain't going to happen between blacks and whites, because there's just, I mean, like, God obviously didn't design them the same.
No, of course not. And I agree with you. They don't see rape as a criminal act. Not at all. It's, of course, you know about the murder of the leader of the AWB. That is out on bail bond for about $30. That's okay because that was also arranged, of course, to get rid of him. He's the symbol of white supremacy, and they didn't like that. So I'm sure they were paid to do it, and all the stories that he didn't pay them, that's not true. But they don't see that as a criminal act, to kill somebody, or to, especially if it's a white. And the rape, of course, that is not, it's a social disorder. That's what the liberal whites call it. It's a social disorder amongst the blacks.
And I think they think of the women as being second-class citizens.
Yeah, well, it's like they teach you about the people living in the cage where they grab the women and drag them by their hair. This is how they do it. I mean, it's been proven that if a black gets on a train in the north of the city of the country and he comes down to Johannesburg, it's about say 600 miles. He leaves behind about 18 children. And he's not responsible for them. And this is what people do. I just laugh here when they say, well, we've got to teach the fathers more responsibility. This is not in the makeup of any Negro that a man will not take the responsibility of children. It's not his problem. It's the woman's problem to take care of the children, to take care of plowing and planting and see to it that there's food on the table, because they just sit around under the tree and drink beer and have discussion how they're going to wage a war.
Not too much different in this country.
No, exactly. Well, this is why I'm mentioning it. They keep on. Take New Orleans for example. They will never solve the problem in New Orleans, not before they talk about the race issue. But nobody will do that because then you're a racist. And you cannot
solve
it.
We have a segment of our population. I know they contact this ministry and others. But there's a percentage of people in South Africa waking up either through a white nationalist movement or specifically through the Christian identity movement down there. How large a segment is that? And is it remaining small, and or are people waking up in significant numbers?
They are, but as Nico said, there are so many different groups believing different things. But I think circumstances will push them into uniting. Because it's bad now, but it's going to get worse. And with this stay away, what they call a stay away, not a strike, always softening the situation. And the police that they talk about will be going on strike sometime next week, and they talk about the prison wardens, and they want to drag the army in or to go on strike. So it's going to be absolutely anarchy. That the whites will have to get together. It doesn't matter what language they speak and what they believe in. And put all these things, differences aside, because otherwise we will all go under. And now I'm talking about whites worldwide, too, be they in South Africa or in Finland. It doesn't matter. We are minority.
Don't the whites have difficulty in coming to this country from South Africa, coming to live, I'm talking about, not visit.
Oh, my goodness, is it difficult? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's, I got married to my husband in South Africa, being an American citizen, and I had so many problems with the consul. He told me, we don't want you there. I got my immigration visa 4 o'clock the afternoon, and we flew out there 9 o'clock at night. He still didn't want to give it to me. He said, oh, well, but my personnel really like you. I can't understand it, so I'm doing it under duress. But here it is, and he stamped my passport. And so it is well nigh impossible, and now they're denying whites to go to Australia. It cost a lot of money to go there. And all over the world, it's the same story. We never needed a visa, by example, to go to England. Now we do need a visa to go to England.
Of course, the problem in this country is that they're letting the Mexicans invade us from the south,
yes.
And they're also discriminating against whites from any country
exactly. That
want to come in.
Yes.
So we're in the process of repeating what took place in South Africa and Rhodesia.
Yes.
And, well, England's going socialist, too, and I guess Nico, who's originally from there, and Neil both, can tell you how the inner cities especially are being taken over by non-white races.
Yes, whole suburbs are actually more sort of immigrants than whites, and it's a sort of a no-go area for whites to go in a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you go somewhere like London, and I think you see more non-whites than whites. I just remember like going through London, and you're like, oh, where are all the white people? It's a game you play in London. It's called Spot the White Man.
Yes, I heard that
going
before.
Going through the streets of London.
Yeah, and you don't hear English anywhere. It's everything but English. It's just incredible. No, and this is not by accident. This is by design. I mean, I never met a black person telling me, you know, I would like to tour the world. They never think about that. So where did they get the money from to do this? I remember in 94 with the elections, a friend of mine down in Cape Town overheard, he grew up in the Congo, and he overheard this dialect. So we asked these blacks, and they had all these buggies full of groceries. And where do you come from? Oh, from the Congo. He said, yes. What are you doing here? Oh, they flew them in to come and vote. So, and I mean, we know this happened in New Orleans also with the last election. They brought them in from all over, from Mississippi, all the blacks to come and vote here for the Democratic Party.
So they're bringing the Mexicans in, so
yes,
they'll vote for the Democrats.
Yes.
And the Republicans want the Mexicans in, so they'll have cheap labor.
Mm-hmm.
I just passed through Springdale yesterday, and Springdale was a nice little city a number of years ago, but Tyson's brought in all the Mexicans, and today the whole town is just covered with Mexicans, and a lot of the signs are in Spanish without any English on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is happening in other places, and I know of people who have lost their job or will not work at Tyson's because they're discriminated against by the Mexicans. That's one reason. The other reason, they're firing or lowering the wages on the white people, but they won't send the Mexicans back to Mexico.
No, because this is by design to destroy the white race. This is what it's all about. And now people better wake up and turn their heads to Yahweh's laws, because that's the only solution and that's the only way things must be and will be. But not before they do that, they will have to go through this tribulation and be settled with all these black races or yellow races or green races or whatever you want to call them. It's a very sad situation.
A lot of the problem is the public school system and the
mm-hmm.
news media, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
They control the movies, the TV and radio and so on. And they make us think that all people are equal, you know, and we should intermarry with them and so on. You constantly see white women, often beautiful white women, with blacks. You wouldn't have seen that years ago.
No, absolutely not. The Hollywood plays a very big role in this. I think, Mike, you will agree with me that they portray them as civilized people. It's such nice lady. She's from the welfare, and she's giving me attention, and she's helping me. While the white is always bashing me and so forth, and they put these blacks into power positions as the chief of police or the neurosurgeon or whatever, and people believe all that.
Well, they were running in the movies prior to Obama being elected. They were running movies and TV shows about black presidents.
Oh, I believe that. And I mean, he also was chosen just like Mandela. When I saw him running, I said, he's going to make it because this is by design, and they already decided it doesn't matter how many people will vote for him, he will make it because this is what they want. And he was trained to take over, just like all the ANC leaders becoming presidents in South Africa, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, all of them. It's the same pattern. It works, so they use it all the time because our people are so stupid. They don't read and they don't realize what's happening to them.
Well, it's not just blacks. You have a non-white governor down there in Louisiana.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness, yes, absolutely. A Punjabi.
And they pretend they're conservative, and you've mm-hmm. got another candidate for Senate in Florida that pretends he's conservative, and yet when it comes down to the race issue, they always side with their own race, and the one in Florida spoke against Arizona's recent law to keep out the illegals. Yeah, same thing with Alan Keyes, who is fairly conservative. And, of course, the Bible commands us not to put the other races over us.
No,
and as you said earlier, it's genetic.
It's genetic. And, I mean, there is not a race on this planet that really know so well to play with white emotions. They can really convince you that they're suffering and you feel so sorry for them, and we have this compassion that we keep on focusing on the wrong people. We've got to focus it on our people. I mean, I was asked, well, can't you give some money for these poor little pickaninnies in Africa starving? Yes, you know what's the solution for that? Colonize, put the whites back there. Then you won't have this problem. Why must I give them money?
That's our whole purpose. God put us down here to rule in righteousness under his laws.
Exactly, and we're not doing that. That's why it's just interesting. We had a prophet, her name was Johanna Brandt. She started the grape cure for cancer many years ago. She came to the United States in 1923, and she was given a message by an angel or a messenger to tell the blacks to stay out of this tribulation of the whites in South Africa, because it's got nothing to do with them. But if they interfere and take over, God is going to completely destroy them.
Would they be blessed if the white people were over them?
Yes.
Scripture tells us that the whole world is waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God.
Yes.
We're the sons of God. We're body, soul, and spirit pre-existed in the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And the created races do not have the spiritual capacity to rule in righteousness.
No.
They need the spirit man, the God race in the earth, to rule over them according, like you said, to Yahweh's laws.
Yes, exactly, exactly. This is why this blood river battle is so important, that they saw these white-clothed men coming out of the heavens fighting on the side of the Boers. And it shows you that if we have really the faith and talk to our Father, He'll be there and solve the problem, but we have to turn back to Him. This is so serious, and it's really, really very important.
Yes, it's a spiritual warfare
that we're in. Yes.
We battle not against the flesh, but against powers and principalities of darkness manifest themselves in the flesh.
Yes.
We got 1 minute left. I'd like to announce that we do have some books, The Negro and the World Crisis, which deals with the Negro. We have some that deal with the race issue and various other things concerning it. Do you have any last comments? We only have a half minute left.
Well, I just hope and pray that the American white people will wake up and stop this onslaught against them from these other races before it gets so bad as like in South Africa. And my blessings go with you all. And, Mike, thank you to give me this time so I can really try
and
wake up
people.
Well,
I'd like to thank you, and I'd like to thank Neil. I'd like to thank Nico for calling in. You've all contributed to this broadcast, and I believe it will be valuable for our people. So with that, the closing announcement will come in, and we'd invite you to write and obtain more information. Thank you.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message, and that you were fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a CD of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.